Major David Katz joining us in studio, and we want to talk about a difficult subject, and that is the whole concept of targeted assassinations. Now, we've seen Israel carrying them out. We've seen the United States carrying them out. Certainly Russia does too. We've seen Britain doing it's a very common tactic that that governments employ. How do we get our head around it?
Well, certainly it's part of the military toolkit. There's no doubt about it. And afterwards we can discuss the effectiveness of using it. But there's certainly a natural abhorrence to these targeted, assassinations, these targeted, killings. Israel has certainly made use of, targeted assassinations since this first intifada quite extensively. And it can sort of, it can take many forms. Via land, sea, air, cell phones have been used, snipers, airstrikes, etc. So it can take many different types of forms in doing it. One of the interesting things is the requirements. What are the requirements before a place like Israel, let's use them as an example, would have to comply with before taking a targeted assassination? Or considering a targeted assassination. So the Supreme Court of Israel has ruled that targeted killing is a legitimate form of self-defense against terrorists. So there seems to be some law behind it. There's no discernible means of making an arrest or foiling such attacks by any other methods. It seems to be a method that's that can be used. Also to prevent imminent attacks. The exact nature of the proof required by the Israelis for killing is classified, so we don't really know.
So we don't know the process.
And obviously, I think it should be classified because you don't want people to be able to say whether they are acting within the bounds of being hit by assassination or not. One of the big requirements for doing this is a great intelligence network. You have to know exactly where this person is. What his circumstances are, and also whether he's embedded within innocent civilians, because a lot of these people do. So you need great intelligence about their movements and that type of thing. And in Israel, also you need the approval of the prime minister. He needs to sign off of it at the end of the day. So obviously, this big dossier is presented in front of his desk, and he will consider it. Importantly, it's not a means of revenge, apparently. It's to deter and prevent current terrorist attacks or future terrorist attacks. It's used as a last resort.
Okay, interesting. Because when you think about Osama bin Laden, for example, in the United States, when they took him out, of course, part of it was revenge.
How
can it not be? And not unreasonably so.
No, not unreasonably so, but I would say how they would justify it is saying that they were trying to prevent future attacks by Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda. But behind it, as you've identified, there must have been an element of revenge. I mean, certainly the USA population were pretty behind it and quite relieved when he was taken out. And also, we can discuss the pros and cons about it. It can be a very blunt military tool also. It can be a sharp military tool or a blunt one, and sometimes it can be very, very ineffective. If we take a look at a very, very good example, let's take a look at Hitler in 1944 in the July bomb plot, where he was, nearly assassinated, nearly taken out. What would have that meant had Hitler died in that bomb blast? In his bunker. How many millions of lives would have it saved in that last year of the war? Because 1944 to 1945, a good percentage of the deaths occurred in that last year, especially on the Holocaust.
Definitely. Many of the communities, that was unfortunately where they had increased the killings, the murder,
Absolutely. So that assassination could have made a fundamental difference to the ending of the war, and I think that's a cut and dried case. It's not so obvious in other cases that we have a look at. Sometimes at the tactical level, it pays dividends, but in the long-term strategic level, does taking out these high-profile people within these terrorist cells actually make a strategic difference.
Well, you know, when I was thinking about it earlier, one of the things that came to mind is you've often spoken about this unconventional warfare that is being fought. And to some extent, these targeted assassinations are an extension of that.
Yes.
Because you aren't fighting legitimate governments or countries where things are conducted in terms of some form of
rule of war,
exactly. It's civilian buses that are being attacked and civilian homes and people, you know, it's completely different. So therefore, surely this would be an extension of that.
Yes, it is an extension, and it is a military tool. My question is whether it has long-term strategic benefit to the war against terrorism.
Right.
And sometimes that is very blurred.
And it's very difficult to know because, for example, now this current event in Israel where a Palestinian jihadist was assassinated, there was a tremendous amount of activity afterwards. They attacked Israel. So therefore, at the end of it, you know, when it's weighed up, was it worth it or not? We will never really know that, will we?
Are there 20 people standing in the queue to replace this person? Maybe even more radical than he was. Maybe even more effective than he was in leadership. So it's a strategic tool.
But did it prevent something? It's almost impossible for us to know.
It's almost impossible. So it's not easily defined. But I suppose we can look at examples and we can say, okay, if it goes to preventing a particular terrorist act by taking out the leadership just before that act is concluded, I'd say clearly yes that it has a military purpose. But on the long-term strategic level, I'm not 100% sure. Although when we use an example of Hitler in 1944 in his bunker, that had a long-term strategic purpose. There's no doubt about that.
So then it's only really with history, with the context, and with the wisdom of time that we can actually look at it and say, well, yes, that really, of course, would have been worthwhile.
Absolutely. And also, if it goes to weakening the effectiveness of the group, but also that is so difficult to determine is whether if you take out a key personnel or many of the key personnel, is it going to limit the effectiveness of that group?
Right, or exacerbate it. 34519, yes. That's the SMS line, or you can telegram us on 061-895-1019. I'm Howard Feldman. I'm chatting to Major David Katz, and we are talking about targeted assassinations. Are they, where do they stand ethically? Where do they stand strategically? And how do we really know if they are effective in the long run or not? I'd love your thoughts. The Morning Mayhem 101.9 Chai FM. Zanati, you had a question.
It's a very complicated issue because, you know, you have these people that are, you know, these terrorists that have this ideology. And of course you want to break down that system. But at the same time, I feel like if you, for example, these targeted assassinations with the Islamic Jihad leader and, you know, the ISIS leader, there are lots of other people that are waiting in line. So is it not pointless to kill this one person when there's a long queue of other people that are going? And doesn't it even make it more dangerous for you to actually, you know, target these people?
I think you've said something very important. You've discussed ideology. So I would say this to you, that if the ideology is strong and still exists, then it may be pretty pointless to take out the leadership of that ideology because there are people standing in a queue waiting to take over. However, if the ideology is on its last legs and the militants or whatever power there is clinging on to power just through being able to control the armed forces, whatever, his or her removal may precipitate the collapse of that ideology in that system. So it all depends if there's a strong ideology behind that leader or whether the ideology is on its way out and it's weak, and taking him out will be effective or not.
That's the thing, is that how do you attack the ideology? Because as soon as you attack the ideology and the system, that's where everything breaks down.
Absolutely.
How do you do that?
And certainly attacking the leadership of the ideology may strengthen the ideology. It may not weaken it. It may strengthen it. So these are all good points and something to consider.
Yeah. So, but the reality as well, though, is surely the there's got to be a message as well. That message is very, very powerful to an organization. Just because somebody else is replacing them surely doesn't mean that we sit back and just allow a terrorist to plot and plan and become stronger and bolder.
Well, certainly you're entering into very difficult territory over there. You're speaking about delivering justice without having a trial. That's what you're saying.
Yes.
So there's different formats here. We're in agreement that if this stops the commitment of a terrorist act, we're all
no
behind
question.
It.
All right. There's so no then, question about it. So then everybody's on the same
absolutely.
Page.
Absolutely. So now you're saying before somebody is tried in a court, you're going to assassinate them for acts that they have committed. I think we're now stepping on international law, and I don't know whether it violates international law. Difficult.
Right.
Difficult.
I'd love your thoughts. 34519 or 0618951019. Although part of me feels very uncomfortable with it, the reality is my overall feeling or my rational brain says that this is not conventional warfare. The parties aren't engaging in conventional warfare. So why shouldn't this take place? In other words, if the terrorist is planning to kill civilians and undermine, the stability of a country in a way that isn't along the lines of conventional warfare with the rule of law, and most definitely crimes against humanity and war crimes, then this has to be one of the answers, whether it sits uncomfortably with us or not.
No, certainly I'm not conflicted with what you're saying.
Right.
If somebody
so
is
your question is more about
ongoing,
so your question is not about the ethics of it, I guess. It is more about whether it is an effective tool to stop the cycle
cycle. Its application is important. So if it's committed in interrupting a terrorist going concern, then I would say to you,
I don't have an
ethical problem about that.
Right.
But if it's a form of retribution,
right,
or it's a form of bringing somebody to justice, and I'll say that in
so it's interesting. I mean, we don't have time, unfortunately. But if you take this further and you look at the Munich terrorists that were targeted one by one by the Israelis, fully understandably.
Absolutely. And a little piece of you just cheers them on.
Absolutely. Not a little piece, a whole big piece of me.
Big piece
they went into
them on,
the Olympic Village and they targeted and killed Israeli sports
people. And they were never going to be tried in international
court. They were being hidden internationally. They were being protected. Israel went out and killed them.
Yet it sets a dangerous, dangerous precedent, doesn't it? I mean, we feel for it and we emotionally, we're happy with it, but it sets such a dangerous precedent. I mean, who is the judge of whether these people should not have been brought to trial?
Well, maybe they should have been, but because they were being protected in a system of terror throughout the world, this was really one of the few options.
Yep.
Interesting. It's a fascinating conversation, and I don't know that we'll fully resolve it,
but
very good to discuss these types of issues. Very, very complex indeed. Hope you enjoyed our time with you this morning. We certainly enjoyed it. Spending time with you. We'll be back tomorrow morning, 6 a.m. to 9 a.m. Go out and have a fantastic Monday. The year is almost done. Remember to be kind to each other, but more importantly, be kind to yourself. See you 6 o'clock. Don't be late.